I'm incredibly bullish on the diversity of locations for the life sciences. The size and concentration will always remain the most acute in Boston, San Diego, San Francisco. But I think the real story is less about the size and concentration and more about the numeracy of these markets across the United States.
Hello and welcome to the REIT Report. I'm your host, Sarah Borkson-Quito. Today, I'm pleased to be speaking with Travis McCrady, Head of Life Sciences Americas Market at JLL, about the latest life sciences data and what that means for the underlying real estate that houses the industry. Travis, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me back.
So first of all, what do capital flows into the life science industry look like today? And how do you think they compare to levels that have been seen in the last few years?
Absolutely. Capital flows are, as one might expect, a little depressed right now through the calendar year in 2023. If you take a look at the rates of capital that are going into the life sciences and the property types that they're going into, we're right around tracking the 2019 trajectory, that entire the years of 22 that marked the sugar highs of the COVID pandemic, those rates are over. We're seeing through the first half of 2023 around $1.9 billion of capital, which is for that second quarter in particular, about a 60% drop from what we saw in 2022. So certainly the number of transactions, the types of transactions in the life sciences is not at the level we had grown accustomed to in 2021 and 2022. That said, if you take a look at our models that show the trajectory of investment, the buildings that are coming online, the geographies in which those buildings are coming online, the rates of entrepreneurship and startups that continue to come into the market, we expect that in the upcoming year, 2024, things should return to a trajectory which is a slow growth trajectory that was much like what we were experiencing pre-COVID. So we're optimistic that capital flows return to a positive trending trajectory. But I think the expectation should be that we are unlikely to see those capital highs again in the short term.
Can you describe what you're seeing in terms of the pipeline for new drug development? And do you think that AI is going to have a big impact on that pipeline going forward?
Yeah, that's the fun thing about this industry, and what makes it so special is that slowly, inexorably, you can always anticipate that scientific progress will not stop. And it manifests itself in entrepreneurship and startups in the life sciences globally, and certainly within the United States. And it also manifests itself in the rates of approvals of drugs coming through the regulatory authorities through our FDA. So if you take a look at one modality in particular, cell therapies, we'll use cell therapies as an example. If we maintain the current pace of drug approvals through the FDA, we will achieve in a single year 9 approvals for cell and gene therapy programs, which would break a single year record. We also are seeing globally a threefold increase in the number of developers of cell and gene therapy drugs, from right around 900 to close to 3,000 companies that are in the business of developing cell and gene therapies. And that increase has occurred over the past 5 years. And we're also seeing an increase of right around 60% in that same time period of the number of clinical trials in cell and gene therapy. So it's just that's just one modality and one example of a principle, which is growth and development in the life sciences has not stopped. Artificial intelligence, as you mentioned, is one of the precision tools that makes that type of growth possible. AI allows us to much more quickly engage in protein engineering and protein design. and everything through to the design and execution of clinical trials. So AI is having a radical reshaping of how we engage in drug R&D and the speed at which we engage in it, which gives us the optimism that our efficacy within the life sciences is only going to improve going forward.
So, Trevor, how do these various trends translate into demand for life science space? What is the current supply outlook, and what impact is that combination having on rent levels?
Yeah, it's a funny time as it relates to real estate availability and the sort of the tension between supply and demand in commercial lab space across the United States. For years, the industry enjoyed a significant imbalance between demand and supply. And it was that excessive demand which undergirded the rapid development of programs and buildings and facilities across the United States over the past couple of years. The net result of that aggressive approach is we're now overweighted. The supply-demand equilibrium or lack of equilibrium has tipped in favor of too much supply in most major markets across the United States. Best case scenario, we are seeing that oversupply of space has resulted in a flattening of rental rate growth. And in some markets, worst case scenario, that has resulted in a slight decrease in rental rates and a sharp percent, on a percentage basis, at least a sharp increase in the amount of sublease space that is available as our tenants, as these companies tend to migrate towards the newer facilities, leaving Class B lab space and older facilities in the rearview mirror. So we're certainly in a period where we are digesting as an industry what seems to be a slight oversupply of commercial leasable lab space in the United States. Different geographies are experiencing that to different degrees. So you'll see in the markets that responded more quickly to the supply-demand imbalance a couple of years ago, those are the markets that are experiencing right now perhaps the highest tension between the oversupply of space and demand. It's a very geographically specific result right now. But on general across the United States, we've just got a little bit too much supply in the pipeline.
Right, and that leads into my next question. We've seen these tried and tested markets in the past, like Boston and San Francisco. Are those sorts of markets still holding steady? And what about expansion into new markets? It doesn't sound like that's really a possibility right now.
Yeah, but Boston and San Francisco are classic examples. They remain in that order, Boston and San Francisco, the leading life sciences markets in the United States, arguably in the world. And as such, the supply-demand imbalance in 2019 in those markets was perhaps the most acute. We needed additional space to meet the industry and its demand for facilities and infrastructure. If you take a look at the data would suggest that those markets have brought a little bit too much on too quickly. And certainly throughout the rest of 2023 and 2024, we're digesting all of those spaces. But what gives us optimism and gives the entire industry optimism is on the other side of the equal sign, just the velocity of growth and the number of companies that are being born in Boston and San Francisco, and the innovative science that they're bringing to bear in those markets in particular. I think the story, the tale for both of those markets is they're playing catch up, and it is still, those are still robust ecosystems which will be resilient and perhaps the most resilient over time. That said, there are plenty of other markets out there in the United States which in their own right are displaying signs of growth and vitality. The sciences are no longer the province of just the coasts. great ideas, great companies are finding capital in other markets that a decade ago, perhaps one might not have considered for the life sciences, and put two markets out there that we track that we find very interesting, Boulder, Colorado, and Salt Lake City, Utah. Both of those markets have extraordinary R1 universities, University of Colorado Boulder and University of Utah and Salt Lake, respectively. Both of those ecosystems have been the direct beneficiary of technology migration as folks have left the coasts in search of different quality of life. Both have unique sources of risk capital that are buoying the life sciences industry, and they're being rewarded for those vibrant ecosystems with opportunities for life sciences growth that are unique and scaled appropriately to the size of those markets. So I'm incredibly bullish on the diversity of locations for the life sciences. The size and concentration will always remain the most acute in Boston, San Diego, San Francisco. But I think the real story is less about the size and concentration and more about the numeracy of these markets across the United States.
Right. And Travis, what are some key takeaways for investors to consider when looking at REITs that are active in the life sciences sector?
Well, yeah, I think the first unfortunate reality is that publicly traded REITs are few and far between. So it's hard to get exposure for investors into, using that vector at least, it's hard to get exposure into the life sciences through that REIT angle. Alexandria Real Estate obviously is the largest publicly traded life sciences REIT on the market, and they are the largest landholder of commercial leasable lab space in the United States, arguably in the world. You can also gain access to Healthpeak and Ventas, which is a capital partner of Wexford, another great life sciences developer. And if you look at all of those REITs, the one counsel for investors is look more for a landlord or developer that has the expertise and this perspective about building a life sciences community, and less for a developer that is simply narrowly focused on just building a building. If there's any lesson that we've learned over the past decade and a half in doing this work, it's that life sciences growth is both the beneficiary and the creator of ecosystems. Mixed use, mixed technology, trans technology ecosystems. So investors need to look for that in their capital partner, as well as looking for that in the geography in which the developments occur.
Great. And Travis, we've covered a lot of ground, but is there anything else you'd like to highlight or you think our listeners might be interested to hear?
Yeah, I think the two areas I think that don't get enough attention when thinking about the life sciences are biomanufacturing and talent. On the biomanufacturing side, as we discussed, we're just getting better at our ability to bring to market through the clinical trial process and into the hands of patients. We're just getting better with the life sciences. We have better tools. We have more opportunities, more diverse ecosystems. We need to keep pace with our biomanufacturing capabilities. And biomanufacturing requires completely different infrastructure than lab buildings, completely separate talent. The locations for biomanufacturing, while there is some overlap with location for R&D, oftentimes the location for biomanufacturing is different than the location for vibrant R&D ecosystems. So at the same time that we're paying deep attention to commercial leasable lab space, we have to have a sense of pedagogy for how to grow our biomanufacturing ecosystem in the United States. And obviously, second, the meta level concern for the entire industry that wraps all of those concepts is availability of talent. The true rate limiting factor of the growth of the industry is not capital, it's people. And we simply don't have enough people to be able to grow this industry at the rate that we would all expect. I mentioned earlier that we'll break a record this year, hopefully, fingers crossed, in the number of cell and gene therapy programs approved by the FDA at 9. The FDA has the expectation that by 2025, they will annually be approving 10 to 20. We can't get there without more skilled workforce. And that's across the entire cycle, whether it's R&D, regulatory affairs, quality assurance, biomanufacturing. All of that requires a very significantly trained workforce. And so that's something that we put a lot of our effort into, not just understanding real estate and real estate infrastructure, but understanding which ecosystems are more efficacious in producing the right kinds of talent and the right kinds of talent in concentration for our companies to feed upon.
Excellent, Travis. Thank you so much for your insights today.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you so much for inviting me back.
And to our listeners, if you enjoyed this episode of the REIT Report, please subscribe or leave a review on your favorite podcast platform.